Hi, everybody. Wynn Claybaugh here, and welcome to this Wynn Claybaugh Masters podcast featuring this beautiful woman, Elizabeth Fay. And first of all, Elizabeth, I just have to tell you that I listen, and I have this army out there of people who are always on the hunt for incredible people for me to interview, people that I need to meet, that I need to learn from. And that's why you and I are here today, because, you know, just straight up, I have to thank our very good, dear friend, Ruth Roach, who I've interviewed a couple of times. Ruth, thank you for putting Elizabeth and I together, because I've had quite the journey in the last couple of weeks researching Elizabeth and who she is and everything that she's about and her story. I love people who have stories, and the stories that I love are stories of when people fall down. And that maybe didn't sound all that right, but you know, when you can fall down and get back up and you're transparent about that story and you want to share it with others because you are a seller of hope, you peddle hope, that then means that you're absolutely making a difference. So before I share with everybody who she is, Elizabeth, thank you so much for agreeing to do this.
Thank you so much. I'm so honored to be in this space.
So Elizabeth Fay's life was profoundly changed by a stylist as a young troubled girl and led to her career in the professional beauty industry. And she now gives back and is in devotion to the idea that what we do not only changes lives, but changes the world. And Elizabeth is going to share with us that story because it's a good one. So from a punk kid to high school drop, to hairstylist, to motivational speaker, she recently shared her mission and message from the TEDx stage, garnering over 1 million views, sharing the impact we make as a beauty community and the ripple effect we are all part of. She launched an award-winning documentary titled Hairstylist Change the World that is all about the impact stylists have, now available on Amazon Prime. And yes, Elizabeth, I bought it and I watched it. So hopefully that put like 5 cents in your pocket, because I did buy it, okay? Elizabeth Fay is a leading voice for the beauty industry and believes that our wealth and well-being go hand in hand. As a globally recognized hairstylist, business and trauma-informed coach, she serves the beauty industry as an advocate and founder of her community, Hair Love University, a great name, which alone has impacted over 30,000 beauty careers and worked with over 50 leading industry brands. She has been a trailblazer in bringing personal development and wellness into our industry, salons, schools, and culture in an integrated way that paves an even brighter future for beauty careers. She also is the founder of her wellness brand, Glow Breathwork, which is a certification for humans who want to bring these tools into their lives and businesses for themselves. She is a 2-time finalist for the North American Hairdressing Awards Educator of the Year and is responsible for facilitating tens of thousands of full-blown career transformations via her soul-spurred hair love retreats, mentorship programs, and private coaching to some of the most influential voices in the industry. She believes you can change the world, and we are all part of that ripple effect. So that's quite the bio. And especially when you say words, or when I read words about being a trauma-informed coach, you know, man, that takes on a lot of responsibilities. And I know that we're going to talk about that today. But as I always say, feel that the best leaders and mentors and teachers are storytellers, and you absolutely have a story. So again, welcome to Masters. And if we can, let's just start with your story, because it's a good one.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much for having me. And I agree. I think stories are so special. They're so sacred. And I always feel like there's not a person you wouldn't love if you didn't know their story. And there's so much wisdom in them, including our own stories, right? We can look back and learn. And I always think when I look back at my life, it's almost like this star map, and I can see how all the dots connected to something where I was like, oh my goodness, I was always being guided, always redirected, even though in those moments that may feel like, you know, where the hell am I going? What am I going to do from here? The moments that bring us to our knees are usually ripe with transformation. So You know, the story that I tell a lot is really my story of how I found my way into this industry. And it is why I'm so passionate about this foundational message that we as humans change the world, that how we be, you know, what we do in our day to day, how we make others feel, how we make ourselves feel. And the best way to change the world is to start by changing your own world, you know, to show up and be the best version of yourself so you can pay that forward, whether that be to your children, to people you work with, your clients, your teams, whoever it is you get the honor of impacting and serving. But I found myself in quite the situation when I was 12 years old. I grew up in a low income family, a divorced family, and we had a lot of different challenges growing up. And I grew up in a harder part of Vegas, and I found myself bopping around to different schools almost every single year from about 11 years old till 16. And my parents were really trying to help me stay straight and here and be okay. And one of the schools I was sent to when I was 12 years old, I hated so much. Like, I can still remember the teacher who smelled like onions. Like, I hated her so much. I hated the school. And I was so determined to come up with a plan to get expelled. And the school I went to at the time had a very strict rule and uniform and dress code. And they had this rule about your hair being distracting. And so I knew what to do. I stole box color and I gave myself like a really cool scene emo haircut. And I just really tried to make my hair as colorful as I could. And when I came back to school, my plan worked. I was expelled. I was kicked out. I was sent to the principal's office. And I remember sitting on the curb waiting for my definitely angry dad to pick me up. And I had a moment that would be one of those moments I would look back on, like that star map, that moment that something greater than me, something bigger than me, you know, whether that be God, universe, source, whatever you call it, kind of nudged you on the shoulder and said, come this way, Elizabeth, come this way. And this woman gave me a business card for a hairdresser. And it said, Robert Chromine Salon, Mandalay Bay, Las Vegas, which meant nothing to me as a 12-year-old girl other than a hairdresser's card. Obviously, now as a beauty professional, I know that that's one of the most famous salons, and that's a big Paul Mitchell named salon. And I just was like, ooh, it's in Mandalay Bay. Let's go. And so we went. I booked the appointment. We arrived. I remember showing up and being like, this is my place. And my dad, who is, you would love him, Wynn. My dad is the best. He's a yoga teacher. All growing up, he did welding for the city, but he leads hikes. He's a medicine man. Like, he's just the coolest, but he wears overalls all the time and like working bibs. So like, that's how he rolled up. And we roll up to the Mandalay Bay Salon and I sit down in the chair and I do what you do in a stylist chair. I shared my whole life. And the stylist learned very quickly I was a troubled teen who needed some love. And I left that day just on cloud nine. I just couldn't believe the energy of the people. They looked like anything they wanted to look like. They were so self-expressed. They just were like rock stars to me. So we left that day and my dad was so pissed about the price of this mandatory color correction. And on the way out, he's like, you're never going back there. Fun fact about me, if you tell me I can't do it, I might just do it on a TEDx stage or do it twice. So I was like, I will do whatever you want to pay you back, Dad. And I'm coming back. I want to earn more money. And my dad, this is a funny fact I don't usually share, I paid it back by cutting wood. My dad is prepared for the end of the world fully. And we have so much wood. We have all of the things prepared. So I, with an axe, cut wood. And so I did that. And 6 months later, I was able to come back to the salon and I put the cash on the table. And the stylist is like looking at me as I drop the wad of crumpled cash on the station. And he's like, where have you been? And I let him know how upset my father was and how much work I had to do to come back and pay him back. And he was like, I'm going to go talk to your dad. And they both came back, dad and bibs, in this cool rock star hairstylist. And they made me a deal. The deal was, if I would come back to the salon with a report card with better grades on it, he would do my hair that day and moving forward, complimentary.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. That act of kindness ended up changing my whole life. And I was beaming. I was all in. And I did whatever I needed to do. And so I got my hair done that day. And he did that for me until I was 16 years old. Wow. And I would keep bringing that report card back. And, you know, as I look back, what was it about it? Was it the highlight? Was it the haircut? Was it the cool clothes they wore? Was it the customer service? No, all of that was amazing and so incredible. It was the way I felt. I felt something in that chair. I wasn't finding getting in trouble. I wasn't finding getting sent to schools. I wasn't finding in a church. I wasn't finding at home. I wasn't finding at school. I felt something in a chair that I'd been looking for. I felt in that safe, sacred place for those few hours, heard, seen, loved, and beautiful. And that stayed with me. That has stayed with me my entire career, my entire life, of what a ripple effect that had. And when I was 16, I rolled up to the salon and I did not have a report card that day. I had dropped out of high school and I was offered a job to be an assistant. They said, how about a job? Show up in all black, work your ass off and learn. And I said, you got it. And that has led to the most beautiful career, many ups and downs, but it opened so many doors for me. And I've just held that like an anchor in my life. How, you know, when I built Clientels again, or I've started a new project or whatever I've created is like, how can I make people feel heard, seen, and loved? If I can just get 10 people to feel that way, that will ripple out and then more people will come from that. And that has served me in ways that are massive and big and huge and life changing. And I just think, you know, sometimes we're like, I'm too small. I'm one person. I can't make a difference. And it's like, we look up at all the leaders in the world and think everyone else has this power and this authority that we don't have. And we wait for permission. And it's like, how can you step into whatever role, whatever stage you're in your life and really own that and be of service of where you're at? And that has a compounding effect. And it's really important. We are connected. We are a collective and we are all creating our world together and our new earth together, that as we go through new phases. So that's what changed my life.
It's such a great story. And it doesn't end there. And we're going to get into that even more. But just this first message of the value that you receive, the value of feeling heard, seen, loved, and beautiful. Now, a lot of the listeners right now are within the professional beauty industry. And so they're like, oh, absolutely. That's what we do every single day. I can stand in front of an audience of 1,000 hairdressers and I could say to them, your job is to help people look good and to feel good. And of course, in unison, they all say that. They know that their job is to help people feel good. But people listening to this who maybe are not in the professional beauty industry and they're thinking, well, yeah, it's easy for a hairdresser to make somebody, you know, feel heard, seen, loved, and beautiful because you're doing their hair, you're improving their looks, you're physically touching them, and that has a lot of power just in that. So of course it's easy for you, but you know, I just want to make sure that people who are not hairdressers, people who are not in the professional beauty industry, we all still have that same responsibility. And what we talk about is that culture that exists, and I don't care if it's a pizza parlor, or a doctor's office, a warehouse, we all have the responsibility of building that culture where people feel safe, where people feel like they belong, and where people feel like they have a purpose. And those three basic things, they need to feel safe, they need to feel that they belong, and they need to feel that they have a purpose. And all of us have a responsibility in playing that role. And I know, Elizabeth, that a lot of the people that you coach are not necessarily from the beauty industry. And so can you kind of share a message that's outside the beauty industry as well and a call to action?
Yeah, I love that. Thank you for saying that. So I actually did a TEDx on this topic where I shared this idea to a global audience, right? So TED is obviously for humans. It's for anybody, no matter what industry you're in. And I used the nugget of my story, this idea of what we do. And I posed the question of, we are all a part of this. How can we learn from maybe this one instance of what a beauty professional does, but how can this be applied? You know, what would be different in our corporate communities or our small businesses or our families if our children felt more heard, seen, and loved? If our teams felt heard, seen, and loved? If we felt more heard, seen, and loved? And so it's the idea that we have this impact regardless. And I love that you shared that. And I've shared this medicine, this message in medical communities, in, you know, women's groups. And I've shared this even in corporate boardrooms or other settings where they're maybe in marketing or leadership in a totally different way. And so this message applies to everything. And I think, you know, it's the idea that we're part of a whole, that we impact each other. And that my dad actually shares an analogy I'll bring in here. At our retreats, my dad is there. And he does yoga and a few things. And he talks about the concept of an energetic potluck, how if you're on a team, if you, you know, work with other people, you're part of a family, all of those things. He's like, we're all part of this energetic potluck. What are we bringing? What are we showing up with? What are we working with here? And I think taking our power back, taking our sovereignty back in that and taking accountability and realizing, like you said, you belong, you matter, and you have a purpose and you make a difference and you get to be the change in whatever space you're in that you wish to see. And that I think is so important for all humans to really tap into in their own lives.
I love that because we're so quick to want to exclude ourselves. I'm off the hook because I'm not a hairdresser. I'm off the hook because I'm not a parent. I'm off the hook because I'm not the boss. And so therefore, what they're talking about does not apply to me. We so want to exclude ourselves. And I appreciate that you're sharing this message. And I love Dad's input, an energetic potluck. Oh my gosh, I love that because we all bring different things. And I mean, how many people show up to a potluck dinner and they don't bring anything? Okay, so you're just here to consume. So I'm going to steal that from Dad. He'll never be able to say it again because when he does, people say, oh, you stole that from Wynn.
So funny. One day, maybe you'll meet him. All the hair lovers know it. He's like, so you can totally say it. He tells them, all right, guys, we're part of this energetic potluck. How are we showing up? What are we bringing to the table at this retreat? And it really shifts the energy because it is a responsibility to realize that we make a difference and we have a purpose is a responsibility, but it's also an honor. And we get to have more sovereignty and personal power with that. So we get a gift from that as well.
Wow. So, but that's not the end of your story here because, so you eventually go to beauty school at what age?
I was 17. So I became an assistant at 16 and I actually went to a Paul Mitchell school and I worked for a Paul Mitchell salon. That's my background. And yeah, I carried on with my career. I was an assistant on the weekends and then I was an assistant after school, worked my way up and really had honestly lots of ups and downs in my career. I had amazing mentors. That was something I learned right off the beginning of my career was the power of mentorship and the power of being a student. And I mean, I run an education company for a living and I'm the biggest student I know. And I think that those two go hand in hand. And so I think the greatest leaders are the greatest learners. And so I really in my career followed, you know, the mentors. I followed the guidance and I kept going and I got to do a lot of different things. I worked in Vegas. I worked in Chicago. I got to work at big hair shows and, you know, kind of worked my way up through all those opportunities. And later I got married. I became a single mom after that. So that was a whole journey in and of itself. And after I had my son and I went through this divorce, I had this time of my life of really stepping into like, okay, what am I going to do? And at that time when I left that relationship, I ended up leaving a religion I grew up in. It was this really like clean slate for me to be like, who am I? What do I want to do? And I ended up, I was a beauty school teacher at the time and a hairdresser. And I ended up within that first year of my son's life going independent. And I stepped into being, you know, a booth runner and building an education company that was small. And I did workshops for about 4 years and I would teach a curriculum I had. I had a few different levels and it was small. I would do 20, 30 people in a classroom two or three times a month, but then it would grow. And I ended up building this clientele around the entire nation. And I was someone I had never gone anywhere in my life. I had never traveled unless it was through work. And so this was like such a cool opportunity to give myself to be able to travel.
And I started building this community and really connecting with people and, you know, making different relationships in the industry. And that's what I did for years. And as I kept on going, I had this really big nudge inside of me that I wanted to host a retreat. And I wanted to host a retreat. So growing up, I shared how much of a troubled teen I was. And my dad was a really big advocate for me in my life. And he, on the weekends, would lead hikes. He would lead medicine walks and teach you how to use the different herbs and plants as medicine and like how you can like eat them or they can be medicinal or whatever that is. So I grew up with this guy and he loves beads and he's just like into like a lot of fun things like that. And he would do these mountain man like events for our youth groups in our church growing up. And the area of town we lived in, our church was kind of a place where you went to because you needed help. And so everyone at our church was kind of in a bad spot, whether they didn't have money, they didn't have food, their kids didn't have rides places. So a lot of us were punk troubled teens. And so my dad was in the side business of helping these troubled teens just out of the kindness of his heart. So I would go on a lot of these outings with him, with my little sister and me, and we'd hike and he would set up these big campouts and do Dutch oven and my grandpa would help and they would do different activities. And it was a really a beautiful place growing up. I felt this connection to something bigger than me outside of like the cement city. Like I would get out into the Red Rocks and I felt something and I didn't know what it was at the time, but it was some form of, you know, my higher power in that place and connection to myself and my heart and Mother Nature and Pachamama. And I just felt this safety and connection there. And so as I moved forward doing my workshops, I was like, what if I brought the two things that have been medicine for me in my life together? What if I did a big camp out and it was for my community, hairdressers? And I called up a bunch of friends, some brand connections I had, and I said, I have a crazy idea. We're going to do this event. It's kind of like a festival, had a baby with a hair show, had a baby with a retreat, and we're going to be out in Zion National Park for 5 days, and we're going to do yoga, and we're going to cry, and we're going to have workshops, and we're going to have the most amazing business speakers and thought leaders, and we're going to do hair in the mountains, and we're going to hike, and we're going to be in community. Everyone was like, this is ridiculous. Let's go. Let's go. And so I sold it to my community and we did our first one. And it was one of those moments where I just followed the spark. And I've done this throughout my career. Like a lot of things, I'm like, I feel like I'm supposed to do this. And I don't always ask the how. I just follow like that inner purpose calling and know that like the how will unfold itself. The right people will come into my life as I make movement, the right humans, the right ideas, the next step. And like my team would be like, we were working till 3 a.m. around the clock, like trying to figure out, like it was our first time hosting an event that big. It's very different to host a small workshop versus a 5-day all-inclusive experience.
Plus you're doing it outside, right? You're building this city out in the middle of nowhere.
Some years we have built it. Some years we've half built it. Some years we've used venues. They're all very outdoor venues. But I mean, we've had years where we've literally spent days building. So we've done lots of quirky things like that. But I had this experience of just like building like Hair Love Land, like this space where like you really can step into this frequency and integrate into it for these 5 days and go home transformed. And so we founded this in 2017. And I feel like Hair Love happened through me and for me. It was like I could have never, like you can only see as far as you can see in the moment. And so it's like I always trust as far as I can see in that moment, knowing like this or better and more is to come. And that my life has been a testament to that. And so as far as I could see was a retreat. And then we did the retreat and we're like, what about a podcast? What about, you know, community spaces? What about a tour? What about, and things just grew. And so we've just kept on going and growing and shaking. And, you know, as things have evolved and changed through 2020, that changed obviously everything. And through that was the idea of, because people are like, what is happening in this Hair Love community? Like, why are so many leaders coming? Why are so many people obsessed with what you guys are doing? Like, what the hell are you doing out there? And I was like, we need to film a movie. So my partner is a videographer and one of our dear friends, Utah's the land of entrepreneurs. So I'm in Utah and someone connected me to this guy who does documentaries. Turns out he was Sam Vea's videographer for like 10 years and loves our industry. So he was our director. We hired him and it was going to be like a little tiny project for like a year. Ended up being 4 years of filming. And I didn't know where it was going. I was just like, keep filming. And so that was really the process of what birthed Hair Love and what we've done. And when we founded this company, we founded it on three things: wellness, beauty, and business. And we were here to amplify the professional. And we knew if we could help them holistically, the whole picture, that would have the ripple effect that we talk about, because each of them impacts so many. So that's really been our journey with Hair Love and just building this community that it builds me. Like, it's taken over my life in a beautiful way and evolved.
Can I ask you a question? So you said it encompasses three things. Say what those are again.
Wellness, business, and beauty.
Okay. So, and again, you're not just speaking to people within the professional beauty industry. Most people would say, well, of course, to be truly successful in life, you have to have that balance of wellness, beauty, and business. So in your experience, so people are coming to your retreats, and I'm not saying that they're desperate, you know, but desperation is a great teacher. Tony Robbins says that we are motivated either through inspiration or desperation. And again, many times it's through desperation. I've hit rock bottom and there's got to be a better way. I'm desperate. And so I seek out this knowledge. And so I'm not saying that everybody who comes to your retreats is desperate, but what have you found between those three, wellness, business, and beauty? Where are people lacking? Where are they struggling the most? Or is it across the board?
It's wellness.
Okay, so then define wellness for us then.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I've kept wellness as a part of my brand for a long time. And I went through one of those moments that you say, one of those desperate moments. And I believe we go through, like, there's not one hero's journey. Like, I wrote this in my book that comes out, is this is not a hero's journey where she fell once and she stood up. Like, no, she fell and she stood up and she fell and she stood up and she fell and she stood up. And it's part of our human experience, but I really see this personal development side that is lacking, honestly, in so many spaces. It's not just our industry. It's a big collective need. And I know that what we've all collectively gone through in 2020 has made this very apparent to all of us, is the human is just a really big part of our success. And so, you know, the wellness side, I see tools for understanding our own nervous systems, like how we're feeling, how we're moving through the world, how we're experiencing life, and that we have some sovereignty and say in this, and how, what? And so understanding, I always say our own technology. You have this amazing nervous system, you have this amazing mind, and no one taught you how to use it. So a lot of what I do is I help humans human better. And, you know, maybe that looks in a pretty package of a retreat or a business life coaching program, but it's human actualization. And if you don't mind me sharing what really stepped me into this.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, break it down even more. And I know that your personal story is a big driver of what you're about to share with us.
Absolutely. So in 2019, you know, kind of everything I've shared, I had this really robust, beautiful career, speaking, helping, owned a salon, all these different, you know, working with brands, all the cool things that were happening. And I'd done a lot, I'd learned a lot, I had impacted a lot of lives. And that year I got so sick that the whispers started to shout and then they started to scream and I couldn't ignore them anymore. And moving forward from this incident, I really try to notice the whispers. I really try not to be fully brought to the ground. I try to be like, what am I learning here? How can I be supported here? You know, what is this showing me? Show me where I'm not seeing something.
Are what you mean by the whispers?
Yeah. So the whispers were probably 2017, 2018 for me, where I was sick. I was burned out. I was tired. I was exhausted. I was having anxiety, sometimes panic attacks. Those were whispers. That was like my body being like, hey, this is a lot. You're not totally well, but I just plowed through. I hustled through. I pushed through. I was so afraid to slow down that I would stop my own momentum. I really didn't see that my wealth and well-being were tied to each other. I thought they came at the sacrifice of the other one. And it wasn't until 20.
Whoa, say that again. You passed over that one too quickly.
I did not realize that my wealth and my well-being were tied to one another. I thought that one came at the sacrifice of the other.
Wow.
And 2019 was like, wake up, girlfriend.
Okay.
So 2019, I was really sick. The doctors were like, you're getting arthritis. You have some markers for some future other autoimmune diseases. You have chronic migraines. You have PCOS. You have just like a lot of the beginnings of things. You're pre-diabetic. Just be healthier. Be healthier. And I'm like, okay, what does that mean? And so, you know, I was prescribed different things. I was told to lose weight. I was told to not be stressed. Well, telling someone to not be stressed.
Right.
Doesn't really fix the stress, right? Especially when you don't understand how to manage your stress. And honestly, most of my very successful entrepreneur friends have experienced what I'm going through in some way, shape, or form. We just weren't talking about it with each other. And we almost like gave ourselves stars and badges for it because we're like, well, this is just the cost of success, I guess. And at that same time, I was planning a tour. I was speaking. All these big career things were happening, which obviously were not contributing to me managing my stress. And I have a partner now who's my husband, but at the time was my boyfriend. And we'd been together for quite some time. And Derek is his name. Derek has struggled with very severe depression and suicidal ideation almost his entire life. And that year, he had a total breakdown. And he had been diagnosed in his 20s with depression. He didn't realize not everyone wants to end their life. He didn't know. He's like, oh, other people don't feel like this all the time. And they're like, no, you are experiencing depression. And so they put him on medicine and he got therapy and that kept him alive, which is amazing. And he moved forward with his life, but he had no other skills on how to manage emotions, how to regulate his nervous system, how to change his mindset. He had nothing else other than that. And it was on this tour where I was so sick. I literally couldn't even scroll on my phone. Like my fingers ached so bad. Like all my joints were hurting. And I just felt at my like worst low. I was like going out and giving these talks and I just would come back and be like, I hurt. What's wrong with me? And I had no consciousness that my emotional and energetic and mental well-being could affect my physical. I did not know at the time they're all connected, that our mental, emotional, spiritual body, all of these work together. I thought my head was this thing that floated on this traveling device that we call a body. And life happened for me neck up. What do I think? What do I know? How can I make it happen? That was how I lived. I lived very disembodied and disconnected, disassociated to my emotions and my feelings in a healthy way. And so I was just like, what is happening? This is so weird. And at the same time, my partner's medicine that was keeping him alive stopped working. And that's quite the pickle when the pill keeping you here on earth stops working. And they gave him a few other medicines. They all ended in like full on outbursts and breakouts. And that can be really dangerous as well. You can have a psychotic break if it's not working with your chemistry. And he did a DNA test that told him which medicines work for his unique chemistry. And they said, the only one that works for your chemistry is the one you've been on. And you can't take any more of it. You're now what we call medicine resistant.
Wow.
Cool. So this was a what the freak do we do moment. Like, how do we move through this? I didn't know where to go, who to call. This was bigger than calling my therapist or my life coach. I didn't know what to do. And this was, you know, as Ram Dass says, the moments that bring you to your knees, you're in the perfect position to pray. And this was just like, send me a sign, send me a lifeline, anything. And I knew my life had to change, but I didn't know how or what. And when we came home from that tour, we decided that we loved each other enough to help each other get well, but we didn't know if we would actually stay together, but we wanted each other to be okay. So let's help each other get okay. And then we can see where we go from there. And I had beautiful people in my life all of a sudden start giving me these little nuggets of, have you heard of breath work? Have you ever heard of the inner child? Have you ever heard of, you know, all of this work that rewires the subconscious mind? And so I started being referred to these different modalities that I may not have been open to before. And just kind of in a moment of like, what do we got to lose? Like, whatever, I'll do some weird shit. Let's try it. Like, I'm open. I'll try it. I'm desperate. And it changed our whole life.
I want to learn more about that. This is reminding me of a good mentor of mine that would say that sometimes that breakdown can actually be, or it actually is, a spiritual breakthrough. Like, this is exactly, you just said that it brings you to your knees, which is the perfect place to start praying, whatever mm-hmm. your belief systems are.
Yeah, whatever, higher self, God, universe, source, Buddha, whatever it is, something bigger, the collective, a guidance system, whatever you can connect to. 100%, 100. And we live in a very heady society, and coming back to the body, back to the heart, is something that I'm very passionate about in leadership. How can we bring this into organizations, into corporations, into small businesses, more heart-centered leadership? But
okay, well then answer that. Heart-centered leadership. Yeah, of course I'm going to have a training from my team on sales strategies and how to handle a complaining customer and better systems for our HR department. Of course, I need those trainings for my team. But now you're talking about heart-centered leadership and what? Breath work? I'm supposed to do a training for my team on breath work? And talk to us about that.
Yeah. So these tools that changed our life in 2020, it had been so profound in just a short amount of time, what had transpired for me, how much I had learned. And a very simple reference, I have so many references I can give you, but something that woke me up to the power within our body and the power of somatics. So your body's your soma, your head's your psyche. Fun fact, our mind and body work together. And when we work with all of us, we get to work with all of us. We have more power, more creativity, and access to all of these juicy things. But there's a book called The Body Keeps Score. And if you just want to read one chapter, read the one on trauma, and it will help give you some awareness to how we process emotions, how we store them. It's very interesting. But that's when I realized my health, my physical health symptoms were so deeply tied to my stories, to my emotions trapped in my body, to all of these things. And when I had began this journey of breath work and nervous system healing and all these other modalities we worked with, that's when I was like, I'm now a student of this work forever. And I've been literally in school about a day and a half a week since then in 2020, learning so many different modalities. And it's what birthed this concept that will lead to your answer of heart-centered leadership. So all of my work, whether I'm at a school, I'm at a medical conference, a beauty conference, coaching someone one-on-one, a retreat, whatever it is centered in this idea of sacred success. And so our sacred success method is this holistic method. How do we actualize a human? How does an acorn turn into an oak tree? Did you realize that little tiny acorns have the divine blueprint to become and emerge? If they're fully actualized, they become a majestic oak tree, which is wild. Humans, just like the acorn, each have a divine blueprint, a divine technology within. But we need proper soil, proper water, sun. We need the environment for us to go through that metamorphosis process where seed, right, cracks, opens up to itself and becomes seedling through the soil. Then seedling dies unto itself and becomes plant. goes through winter, roots fortify, go deeper, strengthens itself, and eventually plant turns into tree and gets wiser, stronger, bigger, more majestic every single year. But it needed certain settings and tools and nourishment to become actualized, to emerge, to make that journey. And that's what really got me thinking when I was like, okay, I've had all this change. I'm living these tools. I can't believe I've lived this long without these tools. I was healing my own personal burnout, which takes years, healing my own nervous system, maintaining my body. It's kind of like working out. When you think of your nervous system, you don't just do it once and you're like, we're good, folks. It's like working out. If you're really buff, you have muscle, you have strength, you maintain it by movement and working out, lifting, nourishment. Our bodies are like this as well. We create what's called vagal tone. And so that we have a vagus nerve runs from top of throat down to bottom of our pelvic floor. When stimulated, it's kind of like a free chill pill, calms you down, and you create vagal tone. And the more you learn to regulate your nervous system, we expand what's called our window of tolerance. So this is where our capacity to have emotional intelligence, handle difficult things and challenges. You can think back, maybe there's a time in your life something would have happened, you would have freaked the hell out and unraveled, and now you handle it with maybe ease and grace and confidence. Your window of tolerance has been expanded. If we don't give humans tools to expand their window of tolerance to regulate themselves, life is happening at them. It's being thrown at them. It's happening to them. They get stuck in victim mentality. They stay acorns. We want people to make the journey, but we have to give them this soil, water, and sun. So the sacred success method is all the modalities that go into human actualization. So we have soul, your unique essence, your unique frequency. No one can take that from you. Your spirit, that higher sense of purpose, mission, dharma, higher power, whatever you feel like you're called to do in your unique path. We have strategy. That's your skill set or whatever you're actually learning to do or you do. Then we have our somatics. That's your body. That's your nervous system. That's how you experience life through the sensing system. We have subconscious mind, which is all the stories, all the things going on. How do we build a positive mindset? How do we create new stories, new neural pathways? How can we tell beautiful stories so we create a beautiful life? So these all go into the whole. No matter what I'm doing, even if I'm speaking on a stage to a conference of a bunch of corporate people in marketing, we're still going to look at the human as the whole, even if we're teaching themselves. We're going to look at the human as the whole. So that is the basis of all of my work, whether it be well-being, personal development, you know, business development. But a lot of my work lives more in the personal development because 80% of our success is psychological. The 20% is strategy and skill. So when we work on the 80%, we see quantum results.
Wow. There are a couple of things that I noticed. First of all, you called yourself a student of this work, which I like that too. Because you didn't call yourself a master of this work. You're still a student and you always will be. So that was enlightening for me to hear as well. And then secondly, that the language that you use, you talk about being a heart-centered leader, the idea of sacred success methods. Was I correct in that everything that you shared with us started with an S? Was that on purpose? It was soul.
Yeah. Yeah.
Purpose, strategy, somatic, subconscious, mind. So that all started with an S. And yes, I'm taking notes. And I have a feeling in that little 10-minute period of time where you were just kind of going through all of it, there were a lot of people like, I have no idea what she's talking about right now. She had me until she went into that whole rant. But that's the whole idea, that when I leave a training or a seminar or a podcast, I'm either leaving validated that, okay, what that person talked about, validated that I'm already on the right track, that I believe what I believe and I'm proud of what I believe, or I leave thinking, well, that person just pissed me off because I have no idea what they're talking about and I guess I better learn what they're talking about, or they touched a nerve. And so maybe one of the two just happened for people. Some people absolutely understood what you're talking about. And when you say things like heart-centered leadership, they're like, oh yeah, she's my tribe, she's my people. And other people are like, man, I'm a jerk as a boss. There is nothing heart-centered about my style at all. So
Mm-hmm. I think that's beautiful. And I think one of my friends says triggers are treasures. If we're triggered, it's a great time to be like, that's interesting. What's here for me? Right?
Oh my gosh. Now, like, why did that come up?
I trigger a lot of people. I also inspire the hell out of a lot of people, but I will gladly teach, share. These tools are for everyone. And I think the basis is everyone has a divine blueprint. Everyone has so much potential and everyone wants to actualize their own potential, right? You want to make a lot of money. You want to be happy. You want to do something that leave a mark, whether that's in parenthood or business or in something in the world. Like, you want to be in your own power in some way. You want to experience yourself in some way. And so if these tools, you know, my question to anyone listening is, if there were tools that could help you understand yourself in a clearer way and help you actualize your potential, how willing would you be to be curious, to invite some of these tools into your life and just try it out? Just try it out. Yeah.
So you and Derek are going through this breakdown, for lack of a better way to share it, pretty much at the same time. And you've committed to each other to work through this, to figure this out together. Now, you're raising a son at the same time, correct?
Yes, my son's from my ex, but he's been in his life almost his whole life, and he's dad, so yeah.
And how old is he now?
He's 10.
Okay.
And he has his own fun journey with ADHD, so these tools we've used as well for him.
Wow. So at what point do you find, okay, this is working, and now we need to start implementing this information, because again, you're students of this work, we need to start implementing this information into these retreats, into the coaching, into the podcasts.
Yeah. You know, I've always shared my journey pretty dang openly. Like, I don't think anyone could have any dirt on me because I probably already talked about it on a podcast episode. And right. So I'm like, yes, that is true about me. You may listen to episode 59. So we shared that we were going through a hard time. And honestly, our community gave us a lot of resources. Like, I got online and was like, I'm having health issues. Like, who else has been through this? And I had thousands of people send me different things. So they watched us go through this. And the movie, if you watch it, I look a lot different through that transformation. That was in the middle of that. I began this healing and awakening. And it's fun to see, because if you know what I went through, you're like, whoa, something happened in this process. My voice is different. I look different. I feel different. But so we just slowly, day by day, we're integrating it. I mean, it started with ourselves, and then it started with our relationship, and then our home. And then little by little throughout 2020, I was bringing small things in. I'm a big believer in not bringing anything into my work until it's embodied. Knowledge is great. It's not the same as embodiment.
What do you mean by that? Explain that to us more.
Yeah. So knowledge is like, I know something. I can repeat it, right? Like, someone could take my class and maybe repeat back what I said. Embodiment is, it's part of who you are. You live it. You walk it. You are it. It's like wisdom. And so I don't bring in tools. Doesn't mean I'm perfect, but it means I'm in the deep practice of them. I have experience with them. I have breakthrough, breakdown with them, especially personal development, where I'm not healed and whole and good forever. I get to remind myself I'm healed and whole every day. And then I lose a loved one or go through something, and I get to go through my next evolution, right? And so I don't bring the tools in until then. So I slowly would bring a tool in and bring a tool in and bring a tool in. And so the people who have been in my world watched that until it got to a point after about 2 years, I retired one of my business programs completely, and it got a new name because I was like, yeah, I need to reintroduce myself. I need to like fully own this work. And I had been helping thousands through it and seen such beautiful results. And so I let the process kind of be natural. You know, brought it in when it made sense and kept going.
Wow. So a couple of fans of yours, Sharon Reiser, Ruth Roach, I told them that I was going to be interviewing you today, and they submitted a few topics and questions. And the first one was, Ruth asked for you to share the story about the chandelier, which, by the way, you share it during the documentary too. So really quickly, the chandelier story, because it's a fun one.
Yeah.
So in that, I talked about I became a single mom. Before I was even married, I had one of my clients bring me a big, beautiful chandelier. I would cut his hair in Vegas, and he had this mansion with all these chandeliers. He worked for a big famous guy, and he gifted me the chandelier, and I loved it.
That's a nice gift there, a chandelier.
Yes. What a good manifestation. I told him I wanted it, and he eventually brought it for me. And I carried it around for years. Like, I had nowhere to put it. Like, I was like, you know, living with roommates, had a small studio salon. So it went from like people's storage units to backup buildings with tarp and a lock over it. Like, it just, it made its way around, but I carried it like a treasure. When I became a mom, I needed cash. I was going through a divorce. So I sold the chandelier and I was so sad about it, but it was just logically like, can't keep carrying this thing with me and maybe I'll never be somewhere that I can put it. And so the chandelier went on its way to wherever it went. And a few years later, I had a woman who was my client say, you should open a salon. And she was showing me this space. And I was like, I am not opening a salon. I'm so busy. I'm doing workshops. I don't have time. I'm a single mom. Like, this is too much. I can't do this. That's too hard. I'm not smart enough. All the inner critic stuff. And I walked up the stairs with her saying this. And she opened the door to this space. And hanging from the salon was my freaking chandelier.
Oh my gosh. How did it end up there? Did you ever find out? How did it end up there?
Yes. So I sold it to a consignment store who sold it to a lady who I actually know, who is friends with her, and she bought it and put it in the building. So it didn't even go that far. It just kind of made its way around. And she just thought it was the most magical looking chandelier she'd ever seen. And that was the deal. I sold my salon last year and I said, you get everything, you don't get the chandelier.
Wow. So yes, you did end up taking over that space in an open up. So that was the chandelier was that sign.
Yeah. Oh, I looked at her crying. I was like, I think I'm opening a salon. And she's like, you are? I was like, yeah, that's my chandelier. And I told her, I said, I'm signing the lease, but the chandelier is mine.
Wow. That's great. That's so great. Not that it's the same thing, but it's funny how like things like that have purpose and meaning for you. My mom passed away in December and my mom loved rock. She was 96 years old. She loved rocks. So and she probably could have been arrested because, you know, she went to Mount Rushmore and she took a rock. I don't think you're supposed to do that, right? You're not supposed to, right? So my mom had a rock from, what's that crooked street in San Francisco?
Oh my gosh, Lombard Street, I think
it's
called.
She stole a brick from that. So my mom had, yeah, again, she's dead now, so nobody can come after her. But so my mom, growing up, whenever we went on vacation, people collect things from vacation. My mom wanted to grab a rock. And I guess my father had said to her, yeah, after years of this, he's like, well, if you can carry it, you can take it, you know, because he was probably tired of carrying all these rocks for her. And they would move from house to house and she would put labels on them of where this rock came from anyway. A couple of years before she died, for Christmas, she told all of her kids she wanted a boulder. So she wanted, and so all of us kids, we all pitched in and we bought this huge, big boulder. It's massive, that is in her front yard. And again, she's passed away and the home is up for sale. But I've said to all the siblings, and when you list the house, they don't get the boulder. The boulder is coming. No. So now I haven't figured it out yet, but I'm trying to figure it out. How to get that huge big boulder from Utah to my front yard here in California. So that's my chandelier.
It can rest at my house on the way over.
I'm in Utah. Thank you. Thank you. So that boulder will follow me from place to place because that's my mom.
I love that so much. Yeah, I think they serve as like anchors of some, you know, idea or person or connection. I think it's cool.
I want to ask you, we're going to start to wrap this up a little bit, but just I was intrigued by this work that you do called trauma work.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think that there's anybody listening to this that can't relate to the thought or the experience of trauma.
Mm-hmm. So trauma is not what happens to us, it's what stays. So something happens and something stays with us and we carry an emotion, a story, right, that no longer becomes intelligent. And we create ways of protecting ourselves that were really intelligent when that thing happened, whether it be, you know, someone harmed you with their words or physically, or someone left your life, or, you know, the list goes on of all the things you were betrayed, you were, et cetera, et cetera. And so we create these responses and stories of how we can stay safe in the world, how we can stay alive in the world. And there are these things that we carry with us like a bag of rocks, but not the good kind that your cute mom had. And they're heavy, and they are like masks, and they muddle our truest expression and authenticity of who we really are. And so, you know, trauma awareness, although a lot of people I speak to may not be working with trauma, they may not be therapists, they may not be life coaches, they may not be healers, right? In that form, having awareness and information around it helps us human better. It helps us relate better. It helps us communicate better. It helps us understand ourselves better, have more emotional intelligence. It helps us have tools to become more regulated and whole humans. And so, although in some of my work, I do dive deep into that in my private client work, some of my retreats, and some of my retreats are not deep in that way. They're more, you know, a little bit more lighthearted, more positive thinking tools, some breath work, business, hair. But I do have containers where I do deep inner child work and somatic work and rewiring work with clients. And so, you know, different areas of my work go deeper than others, but having that awareness and having those tools are life-changing. And so I share them in all of my work through a trauma-informed lens, which means I understand how humans human. We all have ways that we're humaning because of things that we've been through in our lives.
Wow. And I know people listening to this who are in the professional beauty industry or in other industries as well, people who are in the service industry, it's not uncommon for a guest to sit in the chair of their hairdresser and to share trauma. What's your advice to that service provider, to that heart-centered individual who absolutely wants to make a difference? But my gosh, you have 12 clients in the course of a day, you're going to hear 12 stories.
Yep. I will say this, if you work with people a lot, in any industry, this advice applies specifically to my service-based providers, my wellness practitioners that are working with people so intimately hands-on. We literally have a program exactly for this, but, and I have free resources so I can send you because I'll give you what I can on a podcast. It is very important for you to understand the energetic, emotional, physical, and spiritual impacts of being around people all the time and learning tools to protect, clear, and communicate in a way that feels really safe for you and them. That will create sustainability. And at the end of the day, it's all going to come down to these tools, you know, nervous system regulation, a little bit of breath, a little bit of energy clearing, words, way you phrase things, but it's self-care. It's how can I protect myself? How can I care for myself? So I'm serving from overflow and not what's left over. And so self-care is your highest priority. You are the container for your business. You are the container for your success. So your wealth and well-being, they are tied, like I shared. And that's what's going to create sustainability and scalability in your company. And so self-care, learn these tools. Get in rooms where you can learn these so you can human at your highest human potential.
You say get into these rooms, the value of a community, the value of a tribe. And the sad flip side to that are the conversations that really don't matter. There are people who are parts of tribes and communities, you know, I'll just call them the Jerry Springer circles of the world, you know, that are depleting us. You talk about the value of showing up fully energized, fully actualized, where our reservoir is full, where our reservoir is full and not depleted so that we are there for other people. But a lot of people are doing the exact opposite of that.
Yeah, not the energetic potluck you want to go to. Go to someone else's potluck.
Love that. So to wrap this up, talk to me as though I'm a boss. So I have employees, I have team members that I am responsible for. I have power over them. I have influence. Doesn't matter if I'm using that in a way based on fear or whatever, but I've got power. What is your advice to me? How can I go to this next level?
Yeah, I was actually having this conversation with Ruth in Tulum, where I was saying to her, you know, this personal development, this spiritual development work is so crucial for leaders to be doing. We're the ones leading. We're the ones impacting. We're the ones influencing. For the love that's all of holy, like, let it be from the heart. Let it be for good. Let it be from a space of, we know we change the world. Like, can we drop our wounded ambition and really step into service? And that requires you doing your own personal development work. And so if you've been called, I believe we're all leaders, but if you've been called to lead people, you got a crew of people that you're taking care of, you have a sacred responsibility to be the best version of yourself and to be able to come from a place that is the most authentic possible. So have people who hold you. You hold other people. Get mentors that can hold you, that can show you what you don't see. I wouldn't be able to do what I do. I have a whole crew of mentors, like a whole team of them. And they're my people who like hold up the mirror for me. They help me. They in the dark, they're like, you're doing beautiful work. Thank you for what you do. They help me see myself, meet myself. So it's really important for our leaders to do their own personal development work and to be well. We're the ones telling everyone where to go.
Great advice. And then a final message for all of our listeners. And maybe a call to action as well, please.
Yeah. My call to action is I invite you to try breathwork. I will send you something free, but there's also probably local breathwork in your community or on YouTube. I'm happy to send you something as well, complimentary, but just try it. That's my call to action. And my last message would be self-care and personal development work does not have to be so hard and heavy all the time. I think sometimes it is, and sometimes that's necessary, but it also can feel really fun and good and light and nourishing. And I think that's a superpower of just when you're working through whatever you're working through. This is the name of my book, actually, but it's like literally my prayer and mantra in my life is show me how easy it is. Show me how easy it is.
Wow. Wow. And see what you did just there? You sold hope. Wow. I'm a little overwhelmed. In a very good way. So thank you to my friends who guided me to you. And Elizabeth, thank you. I have a feeling that this is going to be the start of hopefully lots of touch points, you and I coming together, because I have a stage and I have a passion for sharing people like you. So thank you so, so much for what you're contributing.
Thank you for letting me be with you. This is really fun for little Elizabeth to be sitting with Wynn on a podcast. You've been a beautiful mentor for me. And so thanks for what you do. And this is really beautiful.
Thank you, sweetheart.